You're listening to the Wordslinger Podcast, episode 99, Hybrid Publishing with Brooke Warner. This episode of the Wordslinger Podcast is brought to you by the audiobook edition of Coelho Medallion. You can find Coelho Medallion on Audible and use your Audible credit, or get Coelho Medallion for free when you go to audibletrial.com/wordslinger.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey everybody, this is Kevin Tomlinson, the Wordslinger, and this is a very special episode of the Wordslinger Podcast because of our guest, who is amazing, and I am very grateful to Brooke Warner for coming on the show. We will be chatting with her in just a moment, but in addition to Brooke Warner, this is the very first Wordslinger Podcast episode to be fully recorded right here in the RV. Actually, I shouldn't say fully recorded because the interview is pre-recorded. So I did the first actual interview with Hank Garner, who will be on the show several episodes from now. We do these a lot. We do a lot of these ahead of time. Sorry about that. But this is the first intro recorded in the RV full on. So it'll be interesting to do that first episode where it'll be Hank's episode, I'm sure, where I do the whole thing. The whole thing has been done in the RV. We'll see. We'll see if it changes the flavor of the show. You can probably hear a little bit of road noise if you listen closely in the background. Maybe you can't. Maybe it's masked out. I'm not sure. But I could hear it when I plugged in. And the thing is, I've come to grips with this idea that there's just going to be... Sometimes there's just going to be interference from the outside world. What can you do? But also, I think it kind of... I don't know. It adds something, some ambiance to the show, I think. We're going to go with that. I'm noticing my voice is a little deeper than usual. Sexier than usual. No. I think I'm having some allergy issues. So, hasn't really affected me other than kind of messing with my voice a little, but I think we'll be all right. The RV life, we just moved in. Let's see, by the reckoning of this episode, when you hear this episode, when it goes live, the day it goes live, it will have been exactly 1 week since Kara and I moved into the RV full time. And it's been an adventure so far. It's been quite an experience. This was the first week that I've actually been sort of, my daily routine has started. I'm doing work for Draft to Digital. I'm doing my writing. I'm doing the podcast, all these things that I normally would do from, you know, a stable, stationary home. I'm now doing in the RV, and that's great. You probably just heard the ice maker delivering fresh ice on demand. But this experience has been great so far. And I did my first Facebook live stream video a couple of days ago. Sat here with a nice glass of scotch and talked to friends on Facebook and answered some questions, and inevitably it was all about the RV, and I am absolutely cool with that. I'm going to do this again. I think I'm going to do it more regularly. Who knows what's going to evolve from this. I am working on something that's meant to be sort of our body of work while we travel. I'll officially announce that when I've got it prepared and ready to go. I've got a YouTube channel I'm building. I don't know how regular I'm going to be able to do that yet. I'm working on it. It's a lot of work, man. Producing this show is difficult enough. And, you know, the other shows, thankfully I've got partners who produce those sort of on my behalf or, you know, in my stead. But then, you know, adding in, I've got the, quote, day job now with Draft to Digital, and that's been fun, and it's been great, and I'm really enjoying that. And I love the fact that I'm able to help indie authors through that service, through that business. That's just, I don't know, that makes everything feel much better. I feel like I'm making more contributions. but I also am really enjoying just kind of figuring out new routines, you know? I still get up early and take Minnie out for her walk. Come back and get prepared. My wife gets prepared for work. We had this sort of fear that we'd be on top of each other. We wouldn't be able to you know, establish routines. But so far that hasn't been the truth. I mean, we've kind of enjoyed, I don't know, I come out, I get a little music playing in the front, and I can close off that section of the RV and just kind of hang out there if I want, do some reading. I do a Bible study I do in the mornings, and I can do that in there, and there's all kinds of things that, you know, I'm able to do while she's getting ready. Typically, she sleeps while I get ready, so it just, we have nice little trade-offs. I think we're going to be okay. And I'm developing some sort of new habits while we do this, and I'm kind of happy about those. Just more exercise, more drinking more water, doing things that are healthier for me. So that's the way that's going. So now let's get to the really important stuff. I don't want to delay this any longer. I have this interview with Brooke Warner, and I'm really glad to have had a chance to talk with her. I was able to connect with her because of some other former guests. I've got a lot of the guests around the show who actually publish with She Writes Press. And Brooke is with She Writes Press. She's also an author in her own right. She's the president of Warner Coaching, Inc. She's got a lot of credits to her name. And what we talk about a lot in this episode is hybrid publishing, which I am interested in. You know, as being in the publishing industry, you know, I'm always looking around to see what new ideas and what new concepts we can kind of capture. And this is an interesting one. It takes sort of the best of both worlds, the traditional and the indie publishing world, and mashes them together into something really kind of cool. And I feel like this is part of the evolution of publishing. I feel like this is part of the way we're growing as publishers. I think that this is going to fold in very nicely. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Brooke Warner, and stick around, of course, afterwards, and we'll have a quick wrap-up. So see you there. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And, you know, today I'm actually talking to somebody. I've actually had several of her authors on the podcast, which has been an experience, and she's got some great people coming to her. I'm talking to Brooke Warner. She's an author, publisher of She Writes Press, and president of Warner Coaching, Inc. Thanks for being on the show, Brooke.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. So, okay, I'm mostly right off the bat very interested in She Writes Press, because, as I said, I've had at least two that I'm fully aware of, and I think more. I've had your authors on this show. I don't know how that ended up happening, if that was by design or accident on someone's part, but they're great people. So I wanted to get to the root of who's out there putting their work out.
That's great. I'd love to talk about it.
Okay. So tell me a little about She Writes Press.
Well, She Writes Press is a press that I co-founded with Kami Wyckoff, and she's the founder of SheWrites.com. And so what She Writes Press is, and how we're different, is that we call ourselves a hybrid publisher, meaning that we're on a spectrum somewhere between self-publishing and traditional publishing. Okay. We function very much like a traditional publisher, and that is, I think, why we're getting so much attention for what we're doing. We have, most importantly, traditional distribution, which means that we can get books into all major accounts, including bookstores. We pre-sell those books into the marketplace. And then the second component of that is that we vet all the manuscripts. So we don't accept just anything. We have really high editorial quality control, and we have gorgeous covers and interiors. The place where we're not traditional is that the authors invest in their own projects, and they keep a much higher percentage of their royalties. So where traditional publishing, an author gets 7.5% of their royalties on print, we give 60%, and that's net. On ebooks in traditional publishing, authors get 25%, and we give 80%. So it is a completely different kind of model in a gray zone, but one that's increasingly getting attention, because traditional publishing has such high barriers right now, and authors are really finding it difficult to get published due to their author platforms or lack thereof, right? So traditional publishers really want branded authors who are coming with a huge fan base, and authors are finding this frustrating because they're saying, well, how am I going to build that huge fan base if I don't have a book to open doors for me? So we're filling that need for authors to have a springboard into their author career.
That's very cool. And I know that, that's definitely an author pain. Speaking as an author, I know that that's an author pain point.
Yeah, because I mean, and I come out of traditional publishing. So when I was in traditional publishing and I was an acquisitions editor, I was an executive editor at Seal Press, which is a women's press here in Berkeley, for about 8 years. I was frustrated by the books that I could not acquire because the author didn't have a platform. So you would get these beautiful books that there was nothing inherently wrong or anything that you would not want about the book itself, but the author didn't have enough built up. And so then we'd basically say, you need to go grow a platform and come back later. Yeah. And so I was rejecting books that I felt should have gotten book deals. And that was really the inspiration for She Writes Press.
So that brings up a lot of good questions, but I mean, in terms of author platform, and it's interesting that we're talking about this because I literally just wrote an email today for Drafted Digital's autoresponder sequence about author platforms. So now I want to see how I stack up. So what does the traditional publishing world look for in an author platform?
It's a number of things. I think a lot of people think it's only social media, which is not true. I mean, social media is obviously hugely important, and they do expect you to have a certain number of followers. They want to see high numbers on your Facebook, your Instagram, your Twitter. Yeah. But it's also a lot about your connections. Who do you know? Who's going to write the foreword? What blurbs are you going to have? Where have you published before? That's another big one that publishers really care about. If you've been widely published in literary magazines, or you've had your work published in anthologies, it shows a certain prolificness. And so it's a mosaic of things. It also, a lot of people today, if they've had a TED talk or they have a podcast, yeah, like you do, all of those things comprise an author platform. It's really anything that is giving an author visibility. But there's also proof of who is your audience. I mean, you could have all of those things, but if no one is watching or paying attention, you know, you have a podcast, but you're not really doing it consistently, for instance.
Right.
You know, and TED is the new Oprah. Like, it used to be that Oprah was your ticket, and that was like, if you've been on Oprah, it's a slam dunk. And nowadays, I really do feel like having a TED talk is that.
Yeah. I know several people personally who have had TED talks, and I'm very envious. I don't feel ready to do a TED talk, we'll say.
I have it on my bucket list, so maybe next time we get together, we'll have both have one in there.
Let's work on it. Yeah, that is on my bucket list. Like but I'm intimidated by it because there's such a level of preparation that has to go into a TED talk, you know. And I'm not a preparation guy, so I'm a wing it guy, and that those two don't gel. So that's okay. That jives. I mean, that all of what you just said goes very well with what I wrote about building an author platform. So in terms of what you're doing, I mean, they don't have to have the platform to come in because it is a hybrid system, but I would assume you're trying to encourage them to build something like that, right?
Absolutely. And it's just turned on its head a little bit. Some authors have a substantial platform or are using She Writes Press to grow their platform, which we're completely happy about. Cool. And we encourage. I really believe that traditional publishing is in a catch-22 position because I think you need a book to really grow a platform. The book is the thing that opens doors to speaking engagements. Most people who get TED Talks actually have a book. And so it is this really odd thing where publishing is saying, oh, well, you have to have this brand and this name, but we're not going to publish you until you arrive. And authors are really frustrated by that. So in my opinion, since a book can be the door opener for all of these things that are platform growers, we're constantly talking to our authors about how to leverage their book to grow platform.
Right. So, okay, what are some of the things that She Writes does to help these authors with that part of the business?
Well, the platform piece itself, the onus really does fall to the authors. Mm-hmm. Because your growing of your own platform is really about what you have the capacity and interest to do. Some people are not ever going to do a TED Talk. Some people are not interested in doing a podcast. Some people don't want to blog, and blogging is part of it, or guest posting and doing all these things. And so everybody has their own mosaic of what that should look like. Right. And so what I do is I educate authors about it. I host a monthly call where we're talking about it. And I think the other thing, I mean, the way that we contribute to it is, of course, giving them a book that is gorgeous, that competes with their traditional counterparts, that they can feel proud to bring into, you know, bookstores or to send to people who might be interested in having them as a host in some capacity. So in those ways, just being their quality partner.
Yeah, you're taking on a huge part of being an indie publisher, at least. I mean, you're the cover design, the editing, all the, you know, everything that goes into the development of this book, you guys are taking on, right?
Yeah, I mean, in that way is how we're like a traditional publisher. It's a one-stop shop. We do everything, right. Including that we're publishing their books on our She Writes Press logo with our ISBN. They do retain the copyright, and so that's an important piece. There is absolutely a creative control as well that is maybe different from traditional publishing. We want buy-in. We're collaborative. And like most traditional publishers, we push back if their instincts seem off to us. You know, I have a lot of conversations with authors about covers in particular, because as I like to say, sometimes authors don't know what they don't know. And it's a very particular kind of, learning curve, I guess is what I want to say about what makes a good cover, what an interior should look like. And so for the most part, the authors trust us on that. But I do spend a lot of time on author education.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've spent a lot of time on that myself. So I like the whole setup of the hybrid model, by the way. And I'm not seeing as many options for that yet. But I have a feeling that's a growing trend, because I do think you're right. I think that traditional publishing is kind of, they're a little stuck right now, because they do need those qualified authors to come in, the people who are going to bring them numbers, but they can't grow those people themselves.
Yeah, and it's interesting because traditional publishing has no problem sort of stocking the field to pick up self-published authors that are performing really well.
Right.
And at the same time, they're poo-pooing self-publishing. So
right, exactly.
it's an odd thing that's going on. And I think they're threatened on the one hand and then completely have blinders on in another arena. And so there's a lot wrong with the traditional world. I have written that I think it's a broken system, but they don't quite know how to fix it. And they want to maintain their dominance. And so they're reluctant to associate themselves with self-publishing in any way, shape or form. So it's complicated.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you know, and we know, our indie publishers know, that there's a big advantage in being able to pivot in what you're doing very quickly. So if my cover isn't working, I can change my cover. If my, you know, if I'm getting feedback that people hate chapter 8, I can go and edit and republish chapter 8. And so I don't know if you guys are doing that sort of thing, but I mean, from the indie side, that's a big advantage. But the traditional publishing world, of course, you know, it could be several years before you'd see changes like that.
Yeah, I mean, we have less flexibility on those kinds of things, in the sense that, let's say you were getting customer feedback that chapter 8 needed to be changed.
Yeah.
We are largely doing print runs. We sort of have to, because we're pre-selling the books into the marketplace.
Right.
And so then you have that inventory. We're more nimble than a traditional publisher, in the sense that we're largely doing small print runs specifically for keeping low inventory and keeping costs down and stuff like that.
Right.
So we can make those changes, but we experience some of the constraints of traditional publishing due to the fact that we have a traditional distributor, and therefore we have really long timelines. So it's, you know, I guess there are some pros and cons to that. I definitely think the pro of the traditional distribution outweighs the cons, though.
Yes. I can agree with that. So okay, what when people come to you guys, I mean, what are the criteria you use to determine who's going to be in, who's not?
It's literally based on the quality of the writing.
Okay.
So it's not about author platform. As I said, we specifically didn't want to do that. We look at the manuscript. We have a submissions process whereby authors send us 25 pages mm-hmm. of the manuscript, and then we read it and we put them on a track. And the tracks are basically one, it's good to go. And largely those manuscripts have been, sometimes they've been agented, many times they've been copy edited multiple times. And these are authors who have sometimes been looking for book deals for a long time. And then the second track is that we think it needs a full copy edit. And the third track is it's not ready. It may need development. It may need coaching. Mm-hmm. And we give authors the opportunity to work with someone from our team to get it ready. And sometimes authors can, and sometimes they can't, you know, depending on the status of that. But in, for those who are ready, who basically get the green light for track one, we proofread every manuscript. So if we get into the proofreading and we go, uh-oh, actually the first 50 pages are perfect, but it's getting really messy as we get deeper, then we contact the author and we talk about it, you know, okay. just to make sure that we have an in-house quality control.
Yep. That's cool. And I'm look. So I, being named She Writes Press, I'm going to assume that you're mostly, or that you are fundamentally working with female authors, right?
Yes. Okay. We're only working with female authors. We actually have a sister imprint, or maybe we should call it a brother-sister imprint. Yeah. Because we merged with another company a few years ago, and so we have another imprint called Spark Press. Okay. And Spark Press is exactly modeled off of She Writes Press, and it does publish men, but it does more commercial kind of work. But I do like to tell authors that, you know, A, that's available, but also that there are other hybrid imprints out there that are doing really great work. And two of them off the top of my head that I know and admire and that publish men are Greenleaf and Ink Shares in San Francisco.
Okay. Okay. And yeah, that's, I mean, that's not that big a deal. I think it's interesting, the idea of, you know, having a specific gender focus. What was the sort of purpose behind that?
Well, I came out of Seal Press, as I mentioned before, which was a women's press. Right. And so I had spent 8 years in women's publishing, and Seal only publishes women. And so I really liked that. And I thought it was important that there would be a woman-only space in mm-hmm. book publishing, which so largely publishes men over women, just right. on a statistical standpoint. And there are other female presses, including the Feminist Press, and there are a handful of others. But even in the 8 years that I was at Seal, the doors to several women-only presses had closed. And you see women-only bookstores closing. There's lots of these spaces that used to exist and kind of were started in the 70s and the height of, you know, some feminist ideology around all of this stuff. And I continue to think that having a woman-only space in book publishing is a huge positive. The authors thrive. They really support one another. We have a sisterhood, a really strong community of authors that support one another. Right. And I just think that happens for women in a different way in women-only spaces. And so I knew Kami when I worked at Seal, the woman who started SheWrites.com. And when I left Seal to start this venture, my idea was that it would continue to be a woman-only thing.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting to me because, I don't think about it. but yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't. And because probably because I'm male, I mean, you know, I don't run into barriers, and I don't run into not those sorts of barriers. I have other barriers I run into. So, yeah, I could see where there could be some strength in that, especially in the community aspect of that. I mean, and how do you guys foster community with your authors?
We have a secret Facebook page where the authors are all in there and they're talking to one another and getting to know each other. The way that supports them is that they are connecting online. They show up to each other's events. We have historically done a tour where we tour the authors together on specific lists, and then they're getting to know each other, but they're getting to know each other on their own. I mean, lots of them are meeting up in their own cities or going to each other's readings and meeting each other. There's a real desire among them to get to know each other. And then they review each other's books. They give each other tips and leads. And so, yeah, it's a big deal. And it makes sense that as a man, you don't experience what women experience. And I think women, because we live in a world where we experience higher barriers around certain kinds of things, right? I mean, mm-hmm. specific to book publishing, I think there's so much evidence that if even just having a male name gives you certain access. Right. And there's so many studies and so many case studies, people who have done experiments on this kind of thing. And so I think to feel that you're in a community that acknowledges that and is doing something about it is a really big deal in and of itself.
Yeah. So how are you guys sort of working, I guess, counter to those limitations? Like, you know, because there, you're right. And I've had conversations like this with several female authors who are asking whether they should write under a male pen name. Just because having their name on the cover, you know, isn't moving the book. So, you know, how are you guys dealing with these things?
Well, I think just the fact of existence is right. is a big one. The fact that we have this space that we're saying, yeah, we are for women only and proudly okay and championing women on that front.
Right.
I certainly have written a lot about this, and there's been a lot of talk about it on SheWrites.com specifically as well. So myself and other authors are advocates, just voices in this space. Talking about it and bringing attention to it. So I think from a sensibility of advocacy and just making it visible by talking about it, it's a big deal. And all of the work that we do to get our authors noticed. I think one of the things about book publishing is that it's difficult as a self-published author to get attention, in part because some of the bigger review outlets don't know who you are. And then right. you're not associated with a big press. And so they're like, well, we don't know you and we don't know your press. And so as She Writes gets more visibility, and we have, and we're, you know, more than 4 years old now, and we've gotten a lot of recognition, we're also providing a platform, and we're opening doors and creating opportunities for our female writers.
Yeah. So so one of the things I've thought about, one of the things that I started the year with this conversation with some podcast partners of mine, but I had this goal this year to branch out more and connect more with the traditional publishing world, which meant meeting more agents, meeting more publishers, editors, and that sort of thing. And now, you know, I've had a little bit of success in that, but I'm now wondering, like, what would be the best approach there? Because there are advantages to the traditional model that I don't have. So I like this idea of the hybrid. Would you recommend that as a step along the way to traditional, if that's your goal, or can you just make that your career?
That's a great question. I guess we're too young to know whether yeah. authors can make this their career. Some authors, of course, are having tremendous success. We have many authors who are publishing their second books with us.
Right.
We have some authors who have said, you know, I want to give a go to self-publishing and see how that works. And then we've had a couple of authors who've gotten agents as a result of their success for She Writes Press. So they haven't sold their second books yet, but they're agented. So I think right. in, you know, once we're 10 years old, we might have better data to see, okay, well, what's going on here. I think that hybrid would be a really interesting thing for someone like you as an option. And as you probably know, there's a term called the hybrid author, right? Yeah. And that just means anyone who publishes in multiple formats. So you're a self-published author, you're a hybrid author, you're a traditional author. And I know people who are hybrid authors, and they're absolutely putting together, you know, an interesting career for themselves, sort of cobbling together these different possibilities. Mm-hmm. And so I think the benefit of it is that if you can't get an agent or a traditional book deal, what the hybrid opportunity gives you is real access into the market, the pre-sales and the sales force behind you, and then also the opportunity in our case to get traditionally reviewed by industry magazines, which is a huge deal. So there are certain there are certain things that we have been able to overcome due to our traditional distribution that self-published authors don't have access to.
Right.
So in that way, I do think that it can be a springboard to traditional publishing if authors want that. But not everybody does. You know, there are plenty of people who are so disillusioned with traditional publishing that that will never be their path.
Yeah, I go back and forth because on the one hand, I grew up wanting to be traditionally published. You know, this was before. And I mean, this is, you know, this was well before indie was cool.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, once I started publishing, you know, I had a traditional contract briefly and terminated it and then went indie and have really enjoyed the sort of immediacy of it. But I could see, I can still see where the kind of career I'm actually after would be much easier if I were traditionally published. I can still see it. So I go back and forth.
Well, and what do you mean when you say the kind of career you're after, what qualifies
well,
that?
I, you know, I don't think that I'll ever get away from the marketing and all the things that I do to promote my work, but it would be nice to have other people who have a vested interest in seeing me succeed. So that's what I would hope for is once I got into that world, I would be enough of a success that I not necessarily could just kick back and relax, but that I don't have to worry about every minute detail of the marketing and promotion of my work at that point. Like I can hand a few things over and just keep building my platform individually.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think then the industry has changed a lot that some authors are getting that kind of treatment and investment that you're talking about and some authors aren't. So some people are having really wonderful experiences with traditional publishing, all the bells and whistles of forever that you hear about and long for, and other people are not getting that. And so that's disillusioning as well. So it's hard. And I think you have to just know that there are all these different options. And I've known people who have gone to traditional publishing and come back to non-traditional because it just didn't feel like as good of a fit. I'm really honestly publishing agnostic. I just think that I want people to have the best experiences that they can have and then also not prevent themselves from publishing just because an agent or an editor at a big house is saying no.
Right. Yeah. That. And at this point in my career, if an agent or a publisher said no, it's not going to affect me at all, right? So I can see what's that?
I said, which is awesome.
That is awesome, and that, and maybe that's the advantage, and maybe that's the idea is to think strategically that way. Like, I don't necessarily think that I've hurt my chances with a traditional house by self-publishing. I think in some ways I may have enhanced my attractiveness, but I like the idea of, okay, now I understand the business because I've been doing it myself. If I went to someone, you know, the male equivalent of She Writes, you know, and got a hybrid deal going, now I can further myself a little and then I could leapfrog from that into traditional if it still felt right. So that I would see it as a sort of progressive strategy. Where anywhere along the way, I may decide, no, this process is much better and stay with what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so it's just, it's a journey and you don't have to do it the same way each time. And I think that's what's cool. For people who are interested in publishing, you can self-publish, you can hybrid publish. And then if that leads you to traditional publishing, great. I think the more experiences you have, then the more you know what you want to do as your career continues to unfold.
Right, right. Yeah, it's remarkable, actually. Okay, so the whole, this model that you guys are using is, to me, fairly new. I mean, I don't see a lot of this. The kind of true hybrid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what, you know, as you're going, and like you said, you guys are kind of young in this. So how are you seeing things trend? Like, what, where do you see the future of it, say, in 5 years?
Yeah, it's a great question. And because we're new and I think we're on the crest of it, there are others, of course, in our space, but already one of our major competitors folded this year, one that I thought was doing really well. And so you never know what's actually going on. And I think as long as these hybrid publishers, and you know, one of my real values is transparency, because I think you have to be so transparent with your authors about what's going on. We enroll them so much and give them so much empowerment, and I really think the only way to succeed is by these open conversations that we have, and they know what's going on and they really understand the model that we're in, because it's new and because we're still figuring it out. And what I think that more and more new publishers are going to jump into this, because I know from friends that I have and colleagues who are running small presses, they're not making it. And so when they hear about what we're doing, they go, oh, wow, that would be a way to actually survive.
Right.
Because the author is investing and there's more, the financial risk is more on the author, and then you can, but you still have these access points that you're offering. So my sense is that what we're doing is going to become increasingly more popular, and that a lot of publishers are going to offer traditional deals and still have traditional deals, but have hybrid deals in addition.
Right. Yeah. Well, I can tell you there is something attractive about it for me, because, at this point, you know, it's my responsibility to do all these things, like the cover, the book descriptions, the editing. All this stuff falls on me in one form or another. Either I'm doing it myself or I'm hiring out and having someone do it. So I could see a definite advantage in connecting with a company like yours. Just from an indie standpoint.
And you may have the aptitude for it, right? And a lot of authors don't. And so I think that self-publishing is amazing for what it is. And I'm an advocate of self-publishing. And in fact, one of my things is about leveling the playing field for everyone, not just hybrid authors, but self-published authors as well. That said, some self-published authors really grab the reins and they do amazing work and they have a sensibility for design, and others are a complete mess and they don't know. And it would be much better for them to just say, okay, let me focus on what I do well, which is the writing, and then outsource the publishing part to someone who knows what they're doing. And I think if more self-published authors are seeing like, yes, this is a good route for us, well, A, we're going to see quality increasing for indie authors everywhere, which is a really good thing. And B, we'll see growth in this arena of the hybrid model.
Well, this is all very exciting, because I'm a geek about this industry. I've become so over the past like 5-6 years. So we're up against the time, so I'm gonna have to wrap us up, but I'm fascinated by this, and I want to talk to you again at some point. And about other topics too, because we didn't get to everything that you actually do. SheePress took over. So we'll get to that. So I want to thank you for being on the show, first of all, and thank you for having such a great pool of authors for me to bring on an interview. So you're doing great work.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on.
No problem. Hang out for just a second, and everyone else, stick around. You're probably hearing some lovely Wordslinger music right now. We'll do the wrap-up at the end of the show, and we'll see you soon. Well, so my interview with Brooke Warner. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope if you are if you're an author and you're getting, I hope you are getting something useful out of this discussion. I think, I said this before, but I mean, I honestly think this is one of the next steps in the evolution of publishing, and I am interested and intrigued to see what's going to come up next, and sort of unfold from this. What I think is interesting about it is, you know, my work with Draft to Digital. I mean, we bring in, one of the things that we do is we spend an awful lot of time vetting on both sides of the publishing table. We vet the authors and their work so that scammers can't get through. We just this week had someone who tried to, you know, publish some stuff that was, I'm just gonna say, inflammatory to a specific culture and race. And we can't allow it. I mean, it violates the terms of service of some of our vendors, and we part of what we do is protect those vendors, and we also do the same thing for authors. We don't work with vendors who are sleazy or scammy. You know, we vet those guys, make sure that the authors are going to get paid, make sure that their work isn't going to be, you know, make sure that it's secure, we'll say. Make sure it's not going to be stolen outright and published elsewhere. You know, these things are important, and it's important to be sort of that pivot point between those two worlds. The hybrid model takes a lot of the strengths of the traditional publishing world and gives them to the indie author. And I think that that's sort of the same sort of idea. This equilibrium we're trying to reach between the traditional world and the indie world, so that the authors themselves are empowered, no matter who the author is. And if an author has worked in a traditional system for his or her entire career, and suddenly decides they want more control over their work, they should be able to do that without losing all the benefits of being published by one of the big publishers. And that's what we're trying to do at Draft to Digital, is make that a reality, and it's clearly what they're trying to do at She Writes. So I think what we're seeing, we're sort of in the early years of the indie publishing revolution, in my opinion. I mean, we've been here since about 2008, and we've seen a lot of changes and a lot of evolution, but I think we're going to see even more as the next couple of years roll out. I think we're about to see a brand new, a new mentality, a new dynamic, a new paradigm. So I think that's what's coming. So I was really glad to have this conversation with Brooke, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. If you're a female author, definitely check out the She Writes Press. I think you will find that beneficial. And of course, she gave some alternatives if you are a male author, and that's cool too. So I'm glad to have these. So that's it for that interview with Brooke, and I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping right here at the end. If you are a fan of the show, if you like what we're doing here, I would appreciate your support. And here are a couple ways you can do that. The best way, the most immediate way, and the way that costs you nothing but your time, and only a little bit of time at that, is if you will go on iTunes and Stitcher and anywhere else you can think of and rate and rank this show. So go on iTunes, search for Wordslinger Podcast, do a review of the show. Tell me what you like about it. You know, tell me you know, the guests that you like. Tell me the information that you most love to hear. Tell me, you know, what is it that you feel is positive about the show? And if you really feel compelled to do a negative review, I can't stop you. But I would say, and I would ask, maybe for the sake of others, let's not do it. And, you know, yeah, that's for my sake too. but also, people are out there looking for encouragement and looking for something that resonates with them. And sometimes when you're a creator, when you are in a creative industry or field and you make something, there's going to be an audience for it. And then there's going to be a group that just despises it. And what I would say is that this material might not be for you, but don't ruin it for someone else. Just be mature and be good, and allow someone else to have an opportunity to have the experience that they would like to have. That said, do what you got to do. I understand. But I would appreciate reviews of all kinds, and I especially love 4- and 5-star reviews. That helps a great deal. Now, there is another way you can help, and that is financially. I'm still working on a lot of this stuff, I'll be honest. But one of the ways that you can help financially is if you just go to wordslingerpodcast.com. There are several places where you can actually click in and support the show via Patreon. Over time, I'm going to improve this, I promise, I swear. But for right now, if you just want to throw a dollar or two my way each month, then that's, or $50, or, you know, 50 cents. I don't know what the limits are here, but whatever you feel comfortable with and whatever you feel that your experience with the show is worth, every little bit helps. So make a Patreon submission. The term has just completely slipped out of my brain, but, you know, help us out a little. Every dime helps, and I do appreciate it. I'm incredibly grateful, and I thank you for your support if you're already supporting the show. So thanks so much. Now, all that said, how would you like to ask me a question? And if you want to do that, I would love it, and I'd love to play it on the air. or read it on the air, depending on how you get it to me. But here's how you do that. You can call 281-809-WORD. That's 281-809-9673. And leave me a voicemail. I did discover that occasionally the voicemail doesn't work. I apologize for that. I'm working on fixing that situation. But essentially, it's if I have Skype open, it won't leave a voicemail. Well, that's weird, right? But if you call that number, I usually try to turn it off when I'm not doing interviews. So, there you go. Whatever. It's a workaround. But call that number, leave me a voicemail. And you can also leave me a voicemail right from the website at wordslingerpodcast.com. Just click on the Send Voicemail tab that'll be floating along the right-hand side of the screen. That'll let you record your message from anything, really. Mobile phones, computers, anything that has a microphone and a web browser. So pop in there and leave me a voicemail. Ask me a question. Ask something about one of my guests. I can always pass questions along. If you have a question about publishing in particular, indie publishing especially, send it my way. And I do field questions for Draft to Digital on the show, so do it. I may not be able to answer some of the technical stuff, but we do have at Draft to Digital this incredibly, attentive and wonderful customer support group. And they will answer any questions you have and help you out in any way they can. So I will probably always redirect questions to customer support, which you can find at drafttodigital.com anyway. But if you have a question about the publishing process, about best practices, about craft, about whatever, I'm happy to answer those. So give me a call. You can also email me. If you hit the contact button in the tab above at the top of the page at wordslingerpodcast.com, you'll find a form, and that form will allow you to send me an email on any topic you like, and ask questions or just make comments or whatever. If you don't want something read or played on air, by the way, please tell me so that I don't embarrass you. I would hate to do that or offend you. I don't necessarily want to offend anybody. I'm okay with offending people every now and then, but I don't necessarily go out of my way to do it. So just let me know in advance. And that's pretty much it. I appreciate the support everyone is giving me. I get email and little notes, social media posts and things all the time from people who are either just discovering the show or are going back through the back catalog and listening to interviews. We've got nearly 100 now. I mean, it's pretty cool and pretty impressive. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty proud of the show. I really am. I mean, I started this, I had my own reasons, most of which were about, connecting me with people, that I wanted to learn from. But it also was a means for me to convey what I'm learning to others and what I, my experiences and, just sharing and bonding with people on this level. I just love everything about this. So thank you for being a part of it. Upcoming, the 100th episode, and it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a special one. This the 100th episode is going to be with my new friend David Brin, who you may remember as the author of such books as The Postman, which was turned into a Kevin Costner film, and he was pretty okay with it, although he had some complaints. So you're going to want to tune in for that interview, and I'm very excited about it. I'm trying to get more people sort of in that at that level of success on the show, and I'm having some success with it. So never hurts to ask, I guess. So tune in for that one. That's going to be next week's episode. Now, I know next week includes the Thanksgiving holiday here in the States. My goal is to go ahead and have an episode ready for the day after the 25th, that Friday. That said, best laid plans and all that, and with all the shifting and everything we're doing, the RV life is interesting. Right now, we're not glued to one place at the moment, and we're going to be rolling out on Friday today, if you're listening, on release day. For me, it's a couple of days away, but we're going to be rolling out for Naples, Florida, to go hang out with Kara's aunt and uncle and cousins and her parents, and we're gonna have some turkey and have some pie and probably some of us will watch football while others of us go and sit quietly somewhere and read or something, stream some movies or something. But that's what we're going to be up to. And, you know, we're taking the RV. We've taken long road trips in it before, but this will be the first time taking a long road trip. And it is our home. Like, it is wherever we park, that's where we live, kind of thing. God, I got to tell you, I'm just really excited about this. The things that we're experiencing. And there's still some challenges to overcome. I bought a rack for the scooter that goes on the trailer hitch of the RV. And the ramp that came with it is too short. And I can't get the scooter onto the ramp. So that's one challenge I got to overcome. The ramp seems kind of iffy to me now that it's assembled and installed. So, and we haven't figured out what we're going to do about Kara's car right now. There's still things to figure out, but that's kind of part of the fun of it. So anyway, I hope you're enjoying the Wordslinger podcast. I hope you will stick around as Kara and I get into this new experience. I will announce whatever it is I'm going to do. I'm still working out some of the kinks to that. It's always something, right? I'm always working on something. But I appreciate you sticking around and supporting me in all of it. So God bless. I hope you have a wonderful weekend ahead. And I hope you enjoyed this interview with Brooke Warner. And I will see you next time with the 100th Wordslinger podcast episode with author David Brin. Can't wait.
Wordslinger.